This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
I'm Kyle Malin, editor of the MERS newsletter, filling in today. Good morning. Thanks for joining us on the program today. Well, we've got a bunch of news to fill you in on. Looks like the Republicans got their nominee for president this fall. Donald Trump has had his path toward the nomination cleared, with John Kasich announcing yesterday that he was suspending his campaign. Ted Cruz suspended his campaign after the results in Indiana showed him significantly losing. So now Hillary Clinton is taking it upon herself to say, well, now this is me versus Donald Trump, right? Well, Bernie Sanders is saying, well, not so fast. I just beat you in Indiana, for crying out loud. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. But you take a look at the numbers, what he would have to do. It's not really very plausible, even though he thinks he can pull off a miracle. Well, let's listen to what Hillary Clinton had to say. She told CNN's Anderson Cooper that she doesn't see herself as the Democratic's presumptive presidential nominee yet.
Well, I'm not calling myself that. I know there are still some contests ahead, and I respect Senator Sanders in whatever choices he makes. And I have a lot of empathy about this, Anderson. You know, I ran to the very end in 2008.
You've been there. You know what it feels like.
And I won 9 out of the last 12 contests. People forget that. I won Indiana. I won West Virginia. I won a lot of states. But I couldn't close the gap in pledged delegates. And the gap between me and Senator Sanders is far wider than it was between me and Senator Obama.
So having been in his shoes, what do you say to him?
Well, I know what he said last week, which I really welcomed. He said that he will do everything he can to prevent Donald Trump from being president of the United States. He will work 7 days a week. I'm going to really count on that because I want to unify the party. I'm certainly going to be reaching out to his supporters, who have far more in common with me and my supporters than they do with Donald Trump and his campaign.
And I know I said finally, but just one more question. Donald Trump has talked about what he would look for in a vice president, mm-hmm. someone with congressional experience to reach out to Congress. Obviously, I'm not asking you who you would pick, but what qualities would you look for? Is there something that you would like to kind of a space you would like to fill in?
Well, I think the most important quality is that this person could become president on literally a moment's notice. There is no more important quality than that. And I intend to take that very seriously and find the person that I would have the confidence in to be a good partner with me, but most importantly, to be a really good president for America.
All right, so that's really interesting. So Hillary Clinton, did I hear that right? She said that she won Indiana? I don't know what number she was looking at. Numbers I'm looking at show her losing Indiana 44-38. Oh, okay. All right. Thanks, Alex. Alex cleared that up for me. Okay. I only got 3 hours of sleep last night, so I guess I didn't hear that right. Okay, because Bernie Sanders got more delegates than she did, 44-38. But you take a look at her delegate count, including the superdelegates, figure she needs 2,383 to win the nomination. She's got 1,683 right now, and then you include the superdelegates on top of that, and she's got 2,200, and Bernie Sanders has got 1,400. So just doing the quick math there, she gets a couple hundred more, and all these are proportional states coming up here, West Virginia, Kentucky, Oregon. So she's in pretty good shape, it would appear. So anyway, so she says she's not looking ahead here, but then she talks to Anderson Cooper about presidential presumptive GOP nominee Donald Trump being a loose cannon when it comes to policy issues. Let's listen to that clip. That's clip 8.
I've seen the presidency up close from two different perspectives, and I think I know what it takes. And I don't think we can take a risk on a loose cannon like Donald Trump running our country. You know, Donald Trump has said it's okay for other countries to get nuclear weapons. I think that's just downright dangerous. He has said wages are too high. I think we need to have a raise for the American people, raise the minimum wage, get wages back going up. I think when he says women should be punished for having abortions, that is, you know, just beyond anything that I can imagine. I think most women can imagine.
He did walk that back.
Well, he's a loose cannon. I mean, he's somebody who has said so many things, and I'm sure he'll be scrambling and his advisors will be scrambling, but he's already said all of these things. He says climate change is a Chinese hoax, and I think it's real, and we've got to pull the world together to deal with it. So you can go down a long list, some of which he's tried to bob and weave a little bit, but I think it's a risk. I think he is a loose cannon, and loose cannons tend to misfire.
All right. Well, that's Hillary Clinton. She's looking ahead to a one-on-one here with Donald Trump here in the not-too-distant future. We're going to reset a little bit of news here from earlier in the show. Michigan House has approved legislation that would allow about 120 frail prisoners a year to be released to live in a nursing home. The House okayed the medical parole legislation late last night. Now goes to the Senate for consideration at a time when the number of geriatric prisoners and associated health care costs is growing. Bill analysis said the legislation would save the state prisons up to $5.4 million a year. The analysis says medically frail prisoners cost between 3 to 5 times more than other prisoners. The bill sponsor is Al Pasholka. He's a Republican from the Benton Harbor area. Says he's still in talks with federal officials to see if Medicaid could legally pick up the costs for the parolees. Michigan prisons hold about 9,000 prisoners who are at least age 50. I don't know if I'd call prisoners who are 50 geriatrics, though. Maybe that news clip wasn't trying to intermingle the two. All right. Well, we've also got Detroit public school legislation. We talked about that last hour. We'll talk about that next hour as well here, too. Big change in the House and what they were trying to do there, bailing out the Detroit public school district. If you want to talk about that or any other subject, feel free to call 888-900-9966. I'm Kyle Mullen, filling in for Steve Gruber today. We'll be back after this.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
You're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Kyle Mullen, editor of the MERS newsletter. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it. Well, joining us here for this segment is an old friend of the Steve Gruber Show, Bishop Aubrey Shines from Glory to Glory Ministry. Good morning, Bishop. How are you?
Fantastic, Kyle. Great being with you this morning.
All right. So the subject that we're talking about today is Obama wants a homosexual memorial. Tell us what this is about.
Well, this is a tragedy, and it has nothing to do with being homophobic. And as I often say, Kyle, truth and reality can sometimes be offensive. Just imagine very quickly if the CDC came out and said that there was tainted meat at a particular company and began to warn America, that would be a great thing. Well, let me tell you why this is a tragedy and why that ties into the CDC issue. When our president stood during the 50th anniversary on Selma and compared the LGBT community to what blacks and whites who went through just a horrific time in our nation, when he compared the movement of the LGBT community and said, look, we need to build this monument and make sure that, by the way, Kyle, you're talking about our federal tax dollars that will have to maintain it, to do so and to compare what's going on and what went on in this nation as if though some kind of way the LGBT community, I don't know, was not allowed to have education, was only allowed to drink from certain water fountains. To compare it, it's a slap in the face of civil rights leaders. I've had relatives that were part of the civil rights. They are offended at what this president is doing. And some would say, well, why make this argument, Bishop? Why should we be involved in this? It's because, Kyle, our tax dollars are funding something that is a historical landmark for those that enjoy in the city of New York. Why should Michigan, Florida, Iowa, why should we foot a bill for something, by the way, that we don't even share common value with? That doesn't make me, Kyle, homophobic. It doesn't mean that I don't respect people and whatever decisions they want to make in life. But why should my tax dollars participate in something, Kyle, that is irrelevant to me? This is part of the tragedy that's going on right now.
All right. So for our listeners' benefit who may not be up to speed on this, the White House is considering the creation of a national monument to the gay rights movement on a small piece of Greenwich Village parkland across the street from the Stonewall Inn in New York, where a 1969 uprising helped inspire the push for equality, advocates said earlier this week. The Interior Secretary, Sally Jewell, and other federal officials are scheduled to attend a listening session next week in New York, during which supporters of such a park will make their case. This is according to the New York Times. Now, you could argue, though, that there's monuments across the country. Obama has the power to do something like this. And if this is a significant part of our history, what's wrong with establishing such a monument, Bishop?
Well, again, Kyle, it goes into, again, we understand that the Parks Administration deals with our Yellowstone and great monuments, that all of us have a historical dynamic, at least we're all involved. But this also ties, Kyle, into what's called our right and our rights in the Constitution to have religious liberty. Now, one would ask the question, what does this have to do with the religious liberty? Understand this, how they're coming in the back door to squash religious liberties in America. When you have fired the Harvard medical professor, Dr. Paul Church, again, simply because he refuses to promote the LGBT community, Dr. Eric Walsh, down in Georgia, renowned public expert, a sermon he preached in because he's also a lay minister, but he's fired from his public job. You go, well, what does this have to do with the monument? Our rights are being squashed in this nation from a community of people that have no tolerance, but demands tolerance from those that don't agree with their lifestyle. This is a conundrum that 60 million people in America have lost their rights in their states to even decide and define what marriage is like. Not just whites, not just blacks, but Americans. We have lost that. And now we're going to take federal money, that's your and I tax dollars, and we're using our tax dollars to maintain, to put on our federal registry that when foreigners visit America, this is one of the great monuments of America. No, it is not. It is where, unfortunately, 40% higher STD and HIV rates happen. That's not homophobic. These are the actual findings, Kyle, from the CDC of America. You have doctors that are losing their jobs simply because they're saying, wait, a community is producing a lot of dreadful things going on. That doesn't mean let's isolate and push them all out, but we're saying, why are we promoting something in America while we're squashing the religious liberties of those that have helped build America?
Okay, if I could here, Bishop, we are talking about civil rights, though. We're talking about the rights of individuals who are being discriminated against because of their sexual orientation, correct?
We are, but it's the same thing, Kyle, because how is it that if you choose, and again, Kyle, if a person wants to choose to love, I don't know, whatever he or she wants to love, that's none of my business. I don't care what you do in that regard. In America, you have that choice. But I should also have the choice not to fund what you do and what you don't do. That is where the conundrum is, Kyle, because we are now funding things where we don't want to fund. We're talking about funding a behavior that 1% of America has by the majority of Americans that don't agree with this.
Okay, but we see this all the time in the budget, right? I mean, there's certain things in a budget that folks are not going to agree with. I mean, I may not agree with putting money into, I don't know, a national education system, right? I mean, maybe.
By the way, I don't either.
Right. But, I mean, it still goes in there anyway, right?
Well, again, you're 100% right, and this is why guys and girls out here that are constantly fighting these type of battles, and this is why we're in an uproar, by the way, in this nation, and this is why outsiders, which, by the way, are having the success they are, because America is being forced to be politically correct in something we shouldn't be forced, whether it is supporting educational federalization of it and or monuments built for the LGBT community that is intolerant within any and other every community, and the voters of America who have overwhelmingly in 32 states, when they've had an opportunity to vote, say, we don't want this behavior lived out in our states. We're seeing our rights and our constitutional rights stripped away, Kyle.
Always a lively discussion with Bishop Aubrey Shines.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
You're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Kyle Mullen, editor of the MERS newsletter, filling in today. Only got a couple hours of sleep last night, thanks to the House of Representatives staying up till 4:30 to get past their Detroit Public Schools reform package. Took them that long to get the votes needed to pass that thing. They didn't have any Democrats support it, even though it gives over $500 million to bail out the Detroit Public School District. They want a little bit more. You know, the initial proposal from Governor Snyder was $715 million. It was just the way that he structured it. And you figure you got $500 million in debt that they got to bail out because the taxpayers of Michigan's holding that debt right now. And then you need $200 million to help the new district get off its feet because they're closing Detroit public schools. They're creating a new Detroit community schools to kind of start afresh. They need $200 million to do that. And the House said, nah, you don't need that much money. You don't need $200 million. We'll give you $30. We'll give you $30 million to kind of get off your feet there. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens now. It's in all likelihood going to end up in a conference committee where the Senate and the House are going to hash out their differences. It's important that they got to get this thing done before June ends, because the school district's new fiscal year starts July 1. And now the transition manager, Stephen Rhodes, has promised everyone, hey, we're going to get you your money. You're all going to get paid. The teachers are going to get paid. The schools are going to be open. Everything's going to be fine. Well, if the legislature doesn't pass something to bail out the school and they're still holding the bag on, you know, $500 million in debt, and then you've got the debt with the pension fund, their own, retirement account. Jeez, that could get really sticky in a hurry. All right, we're going to change gears here a little bit. Joining us on the other end of the line is Julie Gunlock. She's a senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum and directs the organization's Culture of Alarmism Project. Thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, the topic is celebrities and their terrible non-problems. Rich people, Hollywood actresses, and the media elite like to think that they understand the struggles faced by middle and working class Americans, and very often they try to act as if they share those difficulties, and often they just really don't. The most recent example is Gwyneth Paltrow, and tell our listeners what she had to say.
Yeah, she talked about how difficult it is to be a working mother and had the nerve to say that it's harder for her as opposed to, women. She said that women who work a 9-to-5 job have it easier. I mean, talk about a boneheaded comment. She talked about how she has to be away for longer and she has to, deal with strange schedules, odd schedules. Again, this is just sort of dense for them to say this, and I've noticed this trend. That's why I wrote this piece. It isn't just Gwyneth. I've noticed a trend out there among even media elites like Arianna Huffington, who has just written a new book about a whole book on sleep deprivation. She seems to think that this is a major problem. When it turns out, studies show that Americans are getting plenty of sleep, and it's not really the major issue that Arianna wants to be. And so, again, you have these celebrities. They don't really understand what real problems are, and so they sort of make them up.
Well, it's kind of different to say that you understand or that being a working mom is hard when you have the money and the resources to just hire a nanny to take care of your kids. I mean,
exactly. Gwyneth Paltrow recently wrote a book. She likes to cook, so she often writes books and gets deals for, you know, book deals. And her latest book is called It's Just Easy, or It's So Easy, or something like that.
It's all easy.
And, you know, my point in my article is, well, of course it's easy. You have millions in the bank. You have multiple homes, regular, you know, vacations. You have staff, a legion of staff to take care of you and your children. I mean, I would find life a lot easier, too, if I had these things.
And she's not the only one here, too. We've got Kelly Ripa out there who's has made some strange comments as well, right?
Yeah, well, and also, when I brought up Kelly Ripa, I was talking about to look at the media coverage of this so-called drama happening on their show, their morning program.
Right. I mean,
it is a 24 news cycle on these two and their problems at work. I mean, who cares? Do you really think that a family who's out of work and you know, that is struggling to pay the bills cares about these problems? I mean, I understand we have a 24-hour news cycle and we have to fill the air, but it's really astonishing to me that, you know, that news editors seem to think that we share these people's cares. I mean, Kelly Ripa was kind of joking. She left the show in a huff because I guess her partner didn't tell her he was moving on. And she comes back to the show and says the national nightmare is over. I mean, you know, she was joking, obviously, making this sort of Nixonian comment, but you would think it's a Nixonian-level scandal with all the coverage.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard that there's some kind of conflict between her and Michael Strahan. I don't even know what they're talking about. And why should we care? I didn't even know that people listened to or watch the show anymore. I still thought Regis was co-hosting it with her, for crying out loud.
My dad still thinks Regis is on the show, too.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever happened to Regis, for crying out loud? Isn't he still doing that game show where you want to be a millionaire?
Still around. He's still kicking, but I think he's enjoying his retirement, and he's probably ignoring this, like most people should. But again, it just gives rise to these sorts of stories. And I think, you know, most Americans, you know, these elites and these very wealthy Hollywood actresses will make these comments and, you know, sort of out of touch with reality. Again, Huffington writing a book on a subject that is not a problem. And so, you know, we've got more and more of this. And again, I think a lot of it is because of just purely filling the news hours.
Well, it's filling the news hours, and people like to kind of bury themselves in other people's issues, right? Because then we don't have to talk about or think about our own issues, right? I mean,
right.
That's why we watch these reality TV shows, isn't it? Like the show about the people in New Jersey and the Kardashians or whatever, you know, and what they're doing to their bodies now, the plastic surgery they're giving themselves, and Bruce Jenner becoming a woman. I mean, these are the things that we just dive into, so we don't have to deal with our own issues.
Well, I'm all for Hollywood distracting Americans from their problems. What I am not for is Hollywood trying to act like it understands the average American's problems.
Right.
It doesn't. And, you know, when Arianna Huffington says that she wants to cover an issue of national importance, maybe she could cover the collapse of the coal industry and how these workers are really in dire straits now. That might be an issue worth a book instead of, you know, the non-issue of sleep deprivation. I mean, look, I have three kids, three boys. I haven't slept in 9 years. Okay, now I'm doing okay. I'm making it right. And but to Arianna Huffington, this is one of her grand non-problems.
Yeah, well, that's it's a fun topic to kick around here, and the celebrities and their terrible non-problems. Appreciate you joining us on the Steve Gruber Show today. Julie Gunlock, she's a senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum and directs the organization's Culture of Alarmism Project.
Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Kyle Malin, editor of the MERS newsletter, about 20 minutes to the hour. Appreciate you joining us on the program. We've got the congressman from the 7th Congressional District going to be joining us at the top of the hour. We're going to be talking movies with Ron Van Timmeren after this.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
You're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Kyle Mullen, editor of the MERS newsletter, filling in today for Steve Gruber, who is overseas. Well, let's change subjects here to the movies. We got new releases coming out, and as usual, join us to talk about it is Ron Van Timmeren. He's from Celebration Cinemas. Good morning, Ron.
Morning, Kyle.
Well, what's new in the movie theaters? What can people see for the first time this week?
Well, this is the start of the Hollywood blockbuster summer movie season, and Captain America Civil War might be the biggest movie of the summer. A lot of people think that being first is best, and we just don't see another Jurassic World this summer. There's no Star Wars, stuff like that. So anyway, here comes Captain America Civil War, and really this time politics is playing into the situation. It's just everywhere, Kyle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no kidding. That's my job.
Well, apparently, if you've watched an Avengers movie or any of the other heroes from Marvel, you know there's been some collateral damage, and it turns out that they're trying to get these superheroes to live with the rules that the UN has set up for them. Well, Captain America doesn't like living with rules, and Iron Man sort of does, and so that's the dividing line between those who will and who won't pay attention to the rules. So this is an Avengers movie because really they've got all of the big name characters right on down the line, including some new ones. And this isn't, I don't think, a spoiler alert, Kyle. Even a new Spider-Man is making his way to Captain America Civil War.
Wow, that is very exciting. And from what I can tell, this has gotten some good reviews. I'm looking at the Washington Post right now. David Betancourt has a story that is headlined, "Why Captain America Civil War is one of the best superhero movies of all time." That is some big praise.
No kidding, because, man, yeah, there's been a lot of them, man. And, you know, due in part to the casting. I mean, Robert Downey Jr., who can argue that he saved Marvel with that Iron Man, the original Iron Man? He's back, and he's fantastic. Chris Evans, of course, is Captain America. Scarlett Johansson, Anthony Mackie, Don Cheadle, Jeremy Renner. Chadwick Boseman joins the cast this time as Black Panther. There's another new character. I mean, the list just goes on, and they've really made these movies fun, and that's the big part of their success.
It's kind of funny here reading different headlines about the movie. Here's one review from the Mary Sue. She says, "Civil War is good, but too stuffed to be great." And then Time Magazine says, "Captain America Civil War is blessedly light on its feet."
Right.
One says that it's too stuffed, and the other says it's blessedly light on its feet. I don't know how you can be both.
I know. Try to figure out critics for me. And when you do, share it with the world. But that's why we have theaters with 20 screens in them, Kyle, because not everybody likes the same stuff. But, you know, at 93% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, definitely Captain America Civil War is getting the best of the critics' reviews. 2D, 3D, D-Box, those seats that move with the action on the screen, IMAX 3D, it's got all the formats covered, opened up worldwide last week to 200 million plus, and tracking to do that in the U.S. this weekend. So get out of the way. Here comes Captain America Civil War ruling the box office at your local Celebration Cinema.
Is there other movies that are coming out this week that folks need to know about?
Not at all. They've got a pretty wide berth for a couple weeks, although next week that Money Monster movie with George Clooney, another story sort of ripped from the headlines, that looks good. But that's not going to make a dent in Captain America for the next couple weeks here. Jungle Book will still hold over. That's right now pushing $300 million domestic, and that's still a fantastic movie. Huntsman will hold over as well. Keanu and Mother's Day from last week are still in theaters. Barbershop, Zootopia, Ratchet and Clank for families, The Boss, and then, oh, there's Lonely Batman versus Superman. Can only dream of the success Captain America is going to have this weekend.
Yeah, they didn't get the positive reviews on that one that Captain America is getting, are they?
No, not at all. And I think I know why. I mean, that one definitely was bloated with too much action and darkness. And really, Captain America and the Marvel, their formula is to have fun with these characters a little bit. And you got to have some comedy with your action these days. And, you know, you look at some of those movies that have been successful, that's the formula they need.
Yeah. And you mentioned the Jungle Book. It's been out for 3 weeks now, still topping the charts here as far as box office take-in by a large, large amount, $43 million compared to The Huntsman, which is only at $9 million. Is it just because it's a kid movie, or is that a good movie? I haven't seen it yet.
You know what? Looking at the attendance at celebration locations, it's evening shows onto the 8:30 and 9 o'clock and 9:30 shows that are some of the largest attendance. We're getting a lot of teens, a lot of date night action. Certainly families, if you have a rainy weekend like we did in Michigan last weekend. But it's a little bit scary for young kids, right?
Okay.
But it's definitely so well made that even teens and young adults are picking it up, and that's been the secret of their success.
Yeah, and that is rated PG. I was just taking a look at that, and so just be a little careful there. And then The Huntsman, that's been out there 2 weeks, but yeah, just taking a look at what came out last week, nothing really tipped the charts here, and it looks like everything else is going to be dwarfed by Captain America this weekend.
Yeah, and starting tonight, Kyle, the first shows are at 7 o'clock at theaters all over the state and all over the country, Thursday night being the new Friday for opening up a movie. So and the IMAX tickets will be a little tight. There's still some available for later shows tonight, but you can check it out, Captain America Civil War, starting at 7 o'clock tonight.
All right, very good. Thanks for joining us. As always, Ron Van Timmeren from Celebration Cinemas.
See you at the movies.
You're listening to the Steve Gruber Show. I'm Kyle Malin, editor of the MERS newsletter, filling in today. After the top of the hour news, we've got Tim Walberg, congressman from the 7th Congressional District. He can talk about Donald Trump, among other things. We'll be back after these messages.